Welcome to another episode of the Gunblog Variety Cast with your hosts, Sean Sorrentino and Aaron Paulette.
Welcome to episode 173 of Gunblog Variety Cast Radio, a proud member of the Self-Defense Radio Network. How are you doing, Aaron?
I'm doing okay. I'm at that stage of the season where time is passing, and I know it's passing because we've got an advent calendar counting down, but days are flowing one into another so rapidly that I have to constantly check and see what day it is.
So have you put up all the Christmas decorations yet?
No, we have not finished putting up the Christmas decorations. We started on Black Friday. We have all of the outdoor lights done. We have most of the indoor decorations done. We've got the tinsel and the bunting and the various nativities per room. There are at least three nativities in any given room of the house, not counting bathrooms.
Oh, man.
There's just something weird about little baby Jesus watching you do your business on the toilet. That's kind of weird.
You said three nativities per room? Not three nativities total, but three per room.
I'm talking average. I mean, there are way more nativities in the family room where we watch TV because mom collects them and she has to have them all out. So I think it averages out to about three per room.
Okay, so there's like a special thing going on here. That's what your mom collects. That's like, I have a bunch of nutcrackers. I like nutcrackers, so for Christmas, I have all these nutcrackers out. It would be roughly the same as that.
Yeah, mostly. But we've got them scattered all over the place. We still have to put up the various trees. And yes, I use plural.
I was going to say.
And some of you are no doubt wondering, what's the second tree for?
The dog?
Yes. We legitimately have what mom calls a Santa Paws tree, complete with a tree skirt with the little paw prints sewed into it, and there are little dog and wolf ornaments, you know, the Hallmark things where you get the pictures of your dog and you say, you know, like top dog of the year or things like that. And yes, that is where mom puts the dog's Christmas presents.
I am trapped between, oh, that's adorable, and oh my God, she's psycho.
Yeah, that's my mom and I love her, but yeah. So yeah, that's kind of my December. I've been so busy that I actually missed the one-year anniversary of Operation Blazing Sword getting its 501c3 certification. And once we get all of this taken care of, I'm going to do an annual, you know, here's what we've accomplished, here's what we want to do, here's how many people we trained over the year, that sort of thing. And I want to try and make a big deal out of it, but we've got to get the house properly decorated first. So Sean, how are you doing? Is your house properly decorated yet?
I'm thinking really seriously of getting a cut out of the Grinch and one string of lights and have that classic Grinch stealing the lights decoration, but I don't even think I can get my wife to agree to that much decoration.
Really? Your wife doesn't like Christmas decorations at all?
It's a lot of work. She'd do it if I really wanted it, but it's a lot of work for something that, you know, we don't have any kids. We don't have any kids coming over, and we go to her mother's house. And that's where all the Christmas stuff is. So, in fact, a couple of years ago, we took all of my nutcrackers over to her house and we set them up for Christmas when when we go over and do Christmas stuff. So, there's no real point.
You know, Sean, I'm not sure whether I should be sad at your lack of any Christmas decorations or deeply, deeply envious of that.
Well, we got a full show, so why don't you tell us about our sponsor, Aaron?
Thanks to Lucky Gunner and Remington for their support of Gunblog Variety Cast Radio. From Golden Saber to Range Rounds, get a full lineup of quality Remington ammo that ships fast at LuckyGunner.com.
All right, so what's Beth got this week?
Self-defense with kids and dogs.
What?
No, we aren't talking about using your kids as shields or throwing dogs at intruders. Instead, Beth discusses the self-defense options that are available when you have small children and or dogs.
So not too long ago, we had a small addition to our family of five. This one happens to be the four-footed version. Yes, indeed, we decided to adopt a German Shepherd puppy. So we've had Sunny now for several months, and he's working on 5.5 months old right now. And of course, since the very beginning, we've been trying to incorporate a variety of different kinds of training with him. Since he is a German Shepherd, his breed is known for being service dogs, for being protection dogs, and of course for being those awesome, intelligent, brave souls on the K-9 units. We're not so sure where Sonny would fit. His line is the German working breed, but he has shown a lot of the basic protective measures that dogs often have. And of course, adding a four-footed addition to our family made me think about how to conceal carry with a dog. So it's not just about all the concerns parents have when they're with children. It could be concerns with children and with dogs, or for those who just have the four-footed children in their households. Of course, when it comes to kids, there's a lot of different tips and tactics and considerations. The kind of gun that you're going to carry, where you're going to carry it, what position, what holster. Lots of different aspects to consider with those things. When I say the kind of gun, a lot of people are making decisions about their on-body carry or even an off-body carry in a purse or a bag. They're thinking about things like an external safety, or they're thinking about the trigger press, or they're thinking about how difficult or how easy it is to manipulate a certain style of gun. For instance, the gun I decided that I wanted to carry with me pretty much all the time was the XDS 9mm. And those of you familiar with the XD platform, you know that it has that grip safety. And for me, that was just kind of one added layer of protection, knowing that you have to basically hold that gun perfectly or near perfectly and get a real good firm grip on that firearm in order for it to actually fire a round. The other consideration, of course, that goes along with that is where to carry. With newborns or toddlers, any little ones that you're going to need to hold, carry, get in and out of a car seat, those are things that you really have to think about as far as positioning of the gun. It would be fabulous if we could have that outside the waistband holster right there on the hip, on the strong side, but that doesn't work really well when you're toting around little ones. So I had to make different decisions on how to carry my firearm and found really that an appendix carry was oftentimes useful. And even though some people don't like it, off-body carry was also useful. I would carry a crossbody bag or the Ukawala style bag and make sure that the purse was basically attached to me at all times, but it was also hands-free. And of course, all parents know that if you can have two hands free, that's great for rounding up kids. But as a firearm owner, it's also very, very significant in being able to get to my firearm easier, especially if I have a child on one hip that leaves me only one free hand. Some of these things do cross over and carry over into owning a pet or owning a dog. If you are out and about going to the park or just going for a walk around your neighborhood or whatever the case may be, there are some of those same considerations that you have to think about now that you're walking around with your pet. We have been training Sonny to walk only on the left side of our body. So he knows that when we get that collar out, we get that leash out, it's time for a walk. He knows that he is supposed to walk on our left side. And of course, he's supposed to do all those well-trained doggy things like stop when we stop and go when we go and hurry up or slow down when we command him to do so. But that's something really important to think about. You do want to make sure that the hand that you're going to use for your firearm, that dominant shooting hand, is free. It's not tied up in a leash. Situational awareness still is going to be just as important, if not more so, with walking a dog. You want to make sure that you're not encountering any people, but now you might want to make sure that you're not encountering any other dogs or animals that might be attracted to the fact that you have a pet. That can definitely be a concern. I know that some people even carry firearms just for the sole purpose of making sure they can protect themselves against perhaps a vicious dog attack. So think about all those things, whether you have kids or whether you have dogs or both. Think about the type of gun that you're going to use. Think about the type of holster, the positioning of that holster. And of course, you have to think about all the different maneuvering through life's daily activities, whether walking the dog, putting a kid in a child's car seat, or just picking your child up to give them a hug. You have to consider all those things and still make sure that you are able to easily, safely, and effectively access your firearm, draw it safely, and we haven't even gotten into all the complications that can arise if you actually have to use that gun. All in all, it's still very much about mindset and about paying attention and maybe making a few extra compromises here and there or a few sacrifices that you didn't expect just to make sure that you and your family and those around you are going to be safe, protected, and able to use a firearm if ever necessary. Until next time, stay safe and be well armed.
You can read more from Beth at usconcealedcarry.com/blog and click on Pacifiers and Peacemakers in the left sidebar.
This podcast runs on your donations. Go to gunblogvarietycast.com and click on the Donate or Subscribe button in the right sidebar. You can make a one-time donation of any amount or subscribe for as little as $2 a month. That doesn't sound like much, but we pay our server costs monthly. A little help from you is a big help to us.
Felons behaving badly. Friends, family grieve after Franklinton man killed, allegedly by son. Now this one hits a little close to home. I know this man.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I sort of kind of worked for him. I never tell anybody what I do. I work for an insurance company. We go to locations and we do inspections. One of the places that I went was the location that this man owned. Dateline Franklinton, North Carolina. At Johnny's Barbecue in Lewisburg, Richard was more than a regular at the restaurant. He was like family. Friends and family were grieving Monday after the elderly Franklinton man was killed, allegedly by his son. When you eat with somebody two or three times a week for 18 years, you become very close, said restaurant owner Johnny Gardner, one day after Richard was slain. His spot was always right there at that table. It was automatically his when he came in. Police have charged suspect 43 with first-degree murder in the death of his father. Suspect walked to a police station Sunday to report the death of his dad, who was found by police with multiple stab wounds. The son was arrested a few hours later. He was being held Monday in the Franklin County Jail, but was expected to be transferred soon to Central Prison for safekeeping. During a court appearance Monday, suspect, who turns 44 on Tuesday, told the judge that he planned to represent himself in court. Authorities have not publicly disclosed a motive for the killing at the home the father and son shared at 119 North Main Street. The suspect was arrested in March for pushing his father to the ground, and authorities said the son has also had previous charges that included assault, drug possession, and causing damage to property. People who knew the family said tensions between the father and son were well known. Said Gardner, "Just knowing the situation, I was afraid that something would happen to him." His mother left, said a woman who knew about the family's troubles. She couldn't put up with it. Richard owned and founded Franklin Veneers just outside of town. He continued to work at the mill even after the business was passed down to another son. Workers and friends say he had a tender heart, never knew a stranger, and was a devoted father until the bitter end. You always look back and wish you had said something, but in a situation when a man who loves his son, then he's going to support his son any way he can, Gardner said. It's tough to tell somebody to do something different other than support your children.
Wow.
So I knew Richard, and I knew his son, also named Richard. The person who killed him was not the son that I knew. It was a completely different son, thank goodness. I was pretty sure it wasn't. I was like, I looked at the picture. That's the weird thing. I was looking on Facebook and the local news popped something up on Facebook and I looked at the picture. I'm like, that guy looks familiar. It was a picture of the suspect, not the picture of the victim. And I clicked on the story and I started reading and I went, oh my God, the person that they're saying was killed was Mr. Richard Morgan. For a few minutes, I was like, no, that can't be right because like his son wouldn't do that. And then I remembered that his son is Richard Morgan as well, because I always called him junior and senior. It turns out they were two and three, junior and third. But, you know, I had to really think about him. Like, he had the same name, right? So I was really happy to find out that the person that I knew was not the person who killed him.
This article made a point of saying how old the suspect was. And they said that the father was elderly, but they never came out and said. So, I mean, how old is elderly, according to the newspaper? I mean, was the father in the 70s, 80s, 60s?
According to some of the other stories that came out, not this story, but a different story, he was 83 years old.
I'm going to guess that if we look at the suspect's record, we're going to see a pattern of not controlling his impulses.
Two counts, miscellaneous motor vehicle violation, misdemeanor class 3. Harassment, threatening phone language, misdemeanor, class 2. Simple assault affray, misdemeanor, class 2. Communicating threats, misdemeanor, class 1. Drug paraphernalia, use possess, misdemeanor, class 1. Failure to heed light and siren, misdemeanor, class 1. Misdemeanor breaking and entering, misdemeanor, class 1. Possess schedule 6, misdemeanor, class 6. Trash on public roads, litter, misdemeanor, class 1. Possess schedule 2, felon, class I. Assault on an officer, state employee, felon, class I. And assault, inflicting serious injury, law enforcement probation officer in the line of duty, felon, class I.
So a long history of bad choices, probably a strange relationship with his father, and I don't know, maybe some holiday stress on top, and it just all boiled over.
Luckily, I was able to go to the wake for, I don't know that they called it a wake. What do you call it when the viewing?
Yeah, the viewing.
Right. It wasn't really a viewing, but I went to that. That's the thing that I think of as the most important of the events around a funeral. Sticking somebody in a box in the ground, not really interesting to me. The funeral itself, I don't really get, but going to visit the family and telling them that you're thinking about them and that your concern is for them and their well-being and what can you do to help them. That's the most important part. And I was able to go to that last Friday.
Good.
Baron is back with us this week to talk about why you should keep your cell phone number safe, secure, and private in
Tech Tips. Tech Tips. Tech Tips.
You are damaging my calm.
Tech Tips with the Baron.
Hey, 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 kids. So I'm back this week to talk a bit more about why it's important to keep your cell phone number secure and safe and private. And really, it comes down to the fact that a lot of places are still using SMS and phone messaging for two-factor authentication. The thing is scammers are actually starting to figure out ways around this. And one is they can clone your SIM card, and it takes a little bit of work. And heck, even sometimes the phone companies will help do it. An even bigger problem, though, is that scammers will actually call you pretending to be the bank and then say, hey, we're going to send you via text message or email a code to verify we are who we say we are, and they want you to read it back. So they just send you the code, and then you read it back to them. The problem is the scammer is actually sitting on the website, and they're trying to log in, and then they're getting you to read the code back to them. Really, in the grand scheme of things, it would be, hey, you're going to get a code of XYZ blah, 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 and it will be from a known number associated with the bank. That's not actually how it works, though. I've never seen a SMS text message come from anything resembling a number associated with the bank. Really, if in this particular instance, you say, what is your extension? I will call you back via the number on the back of my credit card, because that is the known root of trust you have for the validity of this individual. Or which number on the website do I need to call and go verify that the number is legitimate off of the banking website? The big thing here is scammers are twisting the usage of our phone numbers and our data. And this actually comes into another interesting rant, and that is there are different pieces of data which apart seem innocuous and insignificant and not worthy of note. The thing is when you start adding other pieces of data around and you start coalescing it together, all of a sudden you can end up with information that becomes very valuable, and not only valuable, but can be extremely dangerous. Let's use, for an example, two major data breaches. We'll use the OPM hack, which was the Office of Personnel Management. And in that hack, they basically got the records of anyone who's ever gotten a security clearance. Detailed information, financial information, relationships, you know, spouses, the whole nine yards. If you've ever been through the process, you know exactly what I'm talking about. In another more recent event, we have the Equifax breach. Interestingly, in both of these breaches, we haven't ended up with a sudden rise in identity theft and other issues that come about due to these types of breaches. Same thing with OPM. It is suspected that there may have been a nation state involved. Now, why would a nation state hack those two different agencies? Well, one has detailed financial information regarding people found in the other. So say, for example, you have a wonderful list of everyone who's got a security clearance, thus they have access to important and detailed confidential and secret information. On the other side of this, you now have detailed information of those that would be vulnerable, i.e. those who have bad credit ratings or otherwise find themselves in debt in a manner that can be exploited. Just the same, your email address, your phone number, those types of things, separate, can seem innocuous and safe, but when coupled into other systems and other methods, can start to be used and leveraged against you. This has become interesting because when I grew up, for the most part, there were a lot of things that we were all told to keep private, keep to ourselves, But in the more recent generations coming up, especially those that have been thoroughly enrolled into social media, everything is open, everything's transparent. Why would you ever need to hide any of this? And I think we're now going to start seeing the end result of that type of transparency. And people are going to start understanding that just because you want something private doesn't mean you're afraid of someone finding out about it, or that you're a criminal, or that you're hiding things because you're embarrassed. No, I'm hiding them because it's none of your freaking business. And not only is it none of your business, it's because that type of information in the wrong hands can be used against me and cause me problems and grief in the future. So with that, have a great weekend. Talk to you guys later.
Baron still blogs at the-minuteman.org.
Miguel has a temper. The guy in the truck you just accidentally cut off has a temper. You have a temper. In this most wonderful time of the year, Miguel offers some tips on how to avoid having the worst part of you make the worst decisions possible.
Hello, heathens, and welcome to the holiday season when tempers flare and people behave stupidly. Yes, that is what I want to talk about, a temper. May it be yours, other humans outside the home, the salesperson you're trying to reach, or a customer that is throwing a hissy fit. Temper is really a shitty counselor. For some unknown reason, when you suffer from a temper attack, your brain is unable to access the calm the f*** down and think region, resulting in piss poor decisions. Not too long ago, down here in Magic City, Miami, a guy cut off an 18-wheeler coming in an off-ramp, and the driver stopped the truck, got out, chased the offending vehicle on foot with a knife in his hand, only to be shot by the car driver, who was armed, and by then 50 yards away from the truck. Every single person that knew the driver said the same thing. He was not like that, never knew him to be violent, never even had a traffic ticket or an issue with police. He was just a regular guy who momentarily lost his shit and paid the ultimate price for temper. Now, we are humans, and it is natural for us to want to choke the living crap out of the moron in front of you who needs to read the whole menu at Burger King before ordering, even though he always gets the same f***ing thing. But we are also, allegedly, animals capable of higher thinking, so we willfully can stop temper from taking over. It is not easy, but it can be done. Here are some things that you can do. 1. Understand that you are capable of losing your temper. Most likely you already had an episode of Dustin through your life, so you won't be caught by surprise when this is starting to happen, because you already know what losing your temper looks like and feels like. And that takes us to number 2. Consciously identify when you are about to lose it. That should be easy. Your blood pressure is going up, you are fidgeting or doing the clench and unclench of the fists, you're sighing, you're moving your feet almost like you're doing river dance, and you're shaking your head sideways, and you know, a whole lot of other 3. Memorize and understand the following. That short of loss of life or grave bodily harm, there is nothing out there worth going to prison or ending up in the drawer of a morgue. Okay? Basically, check your ego. You do not need to get that non-soy decaffeinated mocha with sprinkles beverage, nor will your kid will be irreparably damaged if they do not get the latest Star Wars The Colitis of the Jedi toy. Or you must terminate with deadly force the that just cut you off in the highway. Again, check your ego and prioritize. Is it worth dying? Is it worth spending your life behind bars? No. And 4. Once you figure out it ain't life or death, just say fuck it and let it go. You can use other words, but follow the sentiment. An was trying to get in front of you, smile, let him in. Or let her in. You know, this time of the year, mommy's, you know, hell, get out of the way. And maybe the Christmas gift you need to give yourself is one of the newfangled smart espresso machines, rather than dealing with the social justice warriors sobbing as baristas, and who can get your freaking order right. You know, so fuck it. Spend the money on the gadget. And also fuck it. Kids need to learn about disappointment and dealing with frustration. So don't buy them that finger me Elmo. Instead, buy them some Lincoln Logs, so at least they can use their whole hands. I know, he's 16, but he shouldn't be playing with Elmo either. And buy online. Even Walmart has free shipping now. Jesus. No need to play gladiator chariot races in the parking lot of Toys R Us. That's it, folks. Just take it easy and understand that if somebody is trying to piss you off and they don't see you reacting, it is they that will suffer the stroke and you win. See you next week.
Get more Miguel daily at gunfreezone.net.
Hi, everybody. This is Steve Denny from the Pro Arms Podcast, reminding you that this podcast is a member of the Self Defense Radio Network. Check out the other podcasts at selfdefenseradio.net.
The main topic, fix nicks. So, Aaron, you pretty much saw this one coming, didn't you?
You know, I actually wish I had stock in anti-diarrheal medicine for all the pants that have been crapped over this past week.
And see, it's not the pants that are worrying me. I think that there are a lot of people who need Kaopectate toothpaste because they definitely got diarrhea of the mouth. Look, I understand that nobody wants any more gun control. The problem is you have to be very careful when you're complaining about gun control that what you're complaining about is actually gun control.
Or to put another way, which is something that I've seen a lot of this past week, the ideological purity tests, where people are saying that if it's not perfect, if it's not exactly what we want, we have to fight it and repeal it. What we have here is the perfect becoming the enemy of the good. They aren't willing to compromise, and they go all or nothing. And you know, when you're like that, most of the times in politics, you get nothing.
And what's funny is I don't see the compromise here. The real issue is that we want concealed handgun permits to be valid in all 50 states. The anti-gunners do not want this. They do not want this. They hate this. It frightens them down to their very souls, what little souls some of them have. It frightens them to no end that us dumb hicks in flyover country might come and visit their lovely little cities and walk around carrying guns and nothing will happen and they will not be able to use it as a way to attack us dumb hicks and our guns. In fact, the worst possible thing can happen is some tourist on Broadway is going to pull out his heater and ventilate some mugger and be hailed a hero, and that'll be the end of gun control forever.
I vaguely remember Bernie Goetz back in the 80s, the guy who killed a bunch of subway muggers.
Did he actually kill them?
Well, okay, I don't actually remember. I just remember, okay, he shot them. They may not have died. But I do distinctly remember two very separate lines of thought where the authorities were saying, this is vigilante justice and this shouldn't happen and we need to make an example of this man. And then the average New York citizen basically going, well, good.
Uh-huh.
These punks have been terrorizing us for years. It's about time they're scared of us.
Yeah, according to the entry, the 1984 New York City subway shooting, Bernard Goetz shot four muggers and didn't kill any of them. There were four non-fatal injuries. A jury found him not guilty of all charges except for one count of carrying an unlicensed firearm, for which he served 8 months of a one-year sentence. One of the men shot had been left paraplegic and brain damaged as a result of his injury. Unfortunately, it wasn't pointed out to anybody that if he was robbing people on the subway, he was probably brain damaged already. So no brain, no pain. That is their just overriding fear, is that they will lose the ability to frighten their neighbors. When their neighbors say, well, I don't see the blood in the streets. You know, maybe I don't notice that there's blood in the streets in those far off countries called Wisconsin or Kansas or whatever those countries are, you know, far away amongst the corn and pine trees or something. I don't know. But I would certainly notice if the blood was in my street. And I don't see any blood in my street, so obviously this isn't a problem. So in the midst of all of this, we've got the Fix Nicks bill, which is a done deal. Let me tell you right now, you are not going to stop the Fix Nicks bill. The Fix Nicks bill was a straight sail to the finish line, was going to get passed, was going to get signed. Nobody was even going to look at it twice. And so complaining that the Fix Nicks bill, which is basically a must pass for the gun controllers to pretend that they got a victory, adding it to concealed carry reciprocity does two things. Number one, it possibly helps concealed carry reciprocity get passed. Possibly. Maybe, maybe not. But it also denies the anti-gunners a singular thing that they can point to and say, we passed this gun control bill. They can lie and call it gun control. It's not gun control. There's no gun control involved in it. It doesn't take away anybody's rights that they have already. It doesn't advance anybody's rights, really. Maybe a little. But it's kind of a neutral bill.
Uh-huh.
The problem is the gun owners of America decided that they were going to come out with this, I don't know what to call it, but it's their alert. Fix Nicks bill would take away your guns as a result of unpaid traffic tickets.
Yeah, this is the kind of hyperbole that I've come to expect from Dudley Brown and the National Association for Gun Rights, but not GOA.
We are going to get to him later, right? Trust me, we're going to get to that clown. But let me read you a little section from GOA's alert. You probably know that fixed NICs would require the rolls of Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, CHIP, and Obamacare to be trolled for recipients with PTSD, ADHD, and Alzheimer's, that is, people who have had guardians appointed. What you may not know is the second largest category of prohibited persons is, quote, fugitives from justice, end quote, and a good portion of these are Americans who have unpaid traffic tickets.
Dun dun dun.
Did you know that you could be a fugitive from justice if you didn't pay a traffic ticket?
No, I did not. And I have a suspicion that that's not true.
That is exactly not true. Or what you just said is true. Or in any case, the term fugitive from justice is defined in law as any person who has fled from any state to avoid prosecution for a crime or to avoid giving testimony in any criminal proceeding. So unless you have fled the state for the purposes of avoiding being dragged into court and forced to pay your fine for doing 10 over the speed limit, you're not a fugitive from justice, not under anybody's rules.
Yeah, you have to specifically cross state lines, which I believe makes it federal then.
This is dumb. You thought that was hyperbolic. We have the National Association for Gun Rights. The Surrender Monkey Republicans are not only caving to anti-gun Democrats, but working hand in hand with them. The bill introduced by Senators Cornyn and Murphy aims to establish a gun control super database, expanding the Brady Nick's gun owner registry, denying even more Americans their due process rights.
At what point in this secret evil plan do the gnomes steal underpants for profit?
I have no idea. The NICS Gun Registry Program. We need to start with a basic understanding of what the National Association of Gun Rights is. If you give money to NAGR, it is going to line the pockets of Dudley Brown, the guy who runs the organization. That is the sum total of their activity. You give them money, Dudley Brown gets richer. To give you an idea of how much money and effort they're putting into their hyperbolic statements, all you have to do is click on the link for the National Association of Gun Rights PDF press release on this. You've seen this. How much money does it look like they put into their letterhead, for lack of a better thing to call it?
It looks like they may have paid someone to design the logo, but then in terms of the composition, they basically just took a stock letterhead and slapped some words on it.
All this is a, oh my God, this guy's falling, give us money. Let's face it, basically everything that comes out of their mouths is, oh my God, this guy's falling, give us money.
Well, there's a reason that the NAGR is called Nagger, because they nag you all the time for money.
Well, that's all they're about, and everybody knows this. It's not surprising that they were able to outdo GOA. And GOA came back after this to say, you know what? Go ahead and vote for this bill. You know, we have our reservations, but we still support the bill. So if it was the end of the world where people were going to get their guns taken away for having unpaid traffic tickets, do you think they would have said, oh, well, go ahead and vote for the bill? It's pretty serious, but go ahead.
Yeah, it's absolutely horrible. It's the end of the world. There will be secret registries, but you should vote for it anyway. What?
So reading in the Free Beacon, this Free Beacon article was literally linked at the GOA website, right? So this is how I found it. So they clearly believe that this is correct. No, we are not arguing that Fix NICS adds new categories, Michael Hammond, general counsel for GOA, told the Free Beacon. But we are arguing that 18 U.S. Code, as interpreted by 27 NICS Improvement Amendment Acts and its regulations, 27 CFR something or other, is so potentially broad that if every eligible name were submitted to NICS, as the bill proposes, the result would be the submission of a large number of names of otherwise law-abiding Americans. So if all the stars align and former President Obama comes back from wherever he's been, the political dead, and assigns the agencies to his handpicked henchmen and they start submitting names that aren't actually really prohibited, then maybe some non-prohibited people will end up on this list. The problem is that they're not actually prohibited. It's not in the law. It's not, as they said, as they admit, it's not going to add new categories of people who are prohibited. It just might find people who are actually already prohibited and nobody said anything about. Kind of like jerks from the Air Force who've been drummed out after being convicted at general court-martial for serious child abuse and stuff like that.
I've actually read through the bill. It was a drudge. My eyes glazed over at certain points. But from what I can tell, first of all, this does very good things. And I didn't see anything in there about people being put on registries or somehow extra reported. Here's what I gleaned from it. And Sean, you can tell me if I've missed anything or if I've gotten something wrong. But put very broadly, it comes down to these points. Twice a year, federal departments or agencies need to submit data to the Attorney General. And I assume this is to prevent things like what happened with the Air Force not letting the Justice Department know that this guy was a prohibited person. Agencies who don't do this submission twice a year get named and shamed publicly, and you can find them on a database or a website. And the political appointees, you know, not the employees, but the people who get appointed politically, don't get their yearly bonuses for every year they're not in compliance. Aww. And then every 2 years, these agencies need to update their policies to ensure maximum communication with the Justice Department.
That's pretty much all it says.
Yeah, this is the 4473 equivalent of like what happened post 9/11 when all the various intelligence agencies were told, guys, if y'all had talked to each other, this might not have happened. So guess what? Y'all are going to talk.
So we can get into an argument over whether NICS is a good idea or a bad idea. If you want to make the argument that we should repeal Gun Control Act of 1968 or the NFA 34, go right ahead. Those are good arguments. But what you can't say is, oh, we're going to keep NICS, but what we're not going to do is report all the data. We would like to keep this list of people who are prohibited persons limited to only those people who we remember to report, and we'll keep a whole secret list of people who are really prohibited, but we're not going to say anything so they can keep buying guns. This is not a winning political argument, and don't make it.
One more thing to keep in mind is that, like Sean said, you have a bill that's definitely going to get passed, Fix NICS, and we're merging that with a bill that we hope will get passed, and that is the reciprocity. And the thing to keep in mind is that next year is an election year for a lot of people. And gun control is not a winning platform. It may not be completely toxic. It may not be a third rail. But it is not something people generally campaign on these days. This passed the House. We've got the Senate coming up. And one of the things that I think is going to happen with this merged bill is that not only does it give national reciprocity a greater chance of passing, but it also gives a political fig leaf to senators who are either running for re-election in pro-gun states or in states that Trump won in the election. By voting for the bill, it makes them appear to be pro-gun, which helps them gain votes. But at the same time, they can say to their hardcore anti-gun constituents, I voted for this bill in protest because I only voted for it in order to pass the Fix NICS, in order to close, the gun show loophole and, you know, background checks and other boogie-boogie words. And the fact that national reciprocity got passed was just a bitter pill I had to swallow. And it allows them to cover their rear ends while still campaigning and hopefully not hurting their chances for re-election.
There are a lot of senators that are running in states that Trump won. How many of them really want Trump to show up and say, look, you voted for me. This is my signature. I said the NRA was going to get what they wanted. These people stood in front of it. Now it's your job to get rid of these people who are standing in front of the agenda. Do these senators really want to face that? That's why we have the best chance this year. So quit pissing and moaning about the Fix NICS Act, because it doesn't do what GOA says it does. In fact, it might make things a little better for us.
Tiffany is attending a week-long Deadly Force instructor course in Live Oak, Florida. She has just enough time on a break to record her thoughts on why you should attend. And stay tuned for a surprise cameo.
You never really understand a person until you consider things from his point of view. Until you climb inside of his skin, walk around in it.
Hey guys, it's Tiffany, and once again, I'm apologizing for bad audio quality and for what might sound like there's someone urinating within very close proximity to me. That's not in fact what's happening. Actually, it's raining outside as I have stepped out of the lovely First Presbyterian Church in Live Oak, Florida, which is the location of the 5-day Deadly Force Instructor course being presented by Masar Ayub of the Ayub Group and Marty Hayes of the Firearms Academy of Seattle. They're putting on this class. It's been going since Monday and it'll go until Friday. And it basically is taking a look at self-defense from the legal side, what a lot of folks call problem number two. And it's been really interesting. It's not the kind of material that you would have time to get into in your typical basic permit level class. But for those of you who have adopted concealed carry as a lifestyle, for those of you who engage in this sort of thing, you know, for the vast majority of your waking hours, or for those who involve firearms training or usage in your professional lives, a course like this, I think, is actually really beneficial. It's a huge time commitment and it'll probably require some travel, but I do think that the aftermath of deadly force encounters is perhaps undervalued in our training curricula and our training priorities. So I've learned a lot so far. The reason I think it's interesting, obviously problem number one, which is, you know, being victorious or even better, avoiding a deadly force encounter in the first place, is your top priority. But problem number two, the aftermath of a deadly force encounter, is very important as well, because so many of the things that you have to face in the aftermath would be much better handled if we had a firmer grasp of what to expect beforehand rather than learning afterwards. So that's why I think this is really important. And of course, I'm excited to be able to train with Mas Ayub, another one of my mentors and idols. So that's always cool. And I just have stepped out on break. I'm in class, gosh, from 9 in the morning until right around 7 o'clock at night. So it's a tough schedule, but a lot of information packed in there. And we are literally on a 10-minute break right now. So the great thing about that is you can be guaranteed that this segment will be no longer than 10 minutes. But I just wanted to step out and say hello to all of our listeners and take the time while it's fresh in my mind to remind everybody of just how important it is to really understand the laws and the responsibilities, both legally and but in terms of statutes and in terms of case law, which are also binding and help to interpret and sometimes illuminate the murky statutes, but also in terms of your own personal morals and decision making. This class has really helped, as a very large truck drives by, sorry about the noise, but this class and classes like it really do give, I think, students, especially really dedicated practitioners and students of the pistol, give us a chance to think about these kinds of issues when we're sober-minded, as opposed to being assaulted with such really consequential decision-making while also juggling the psychological and emotional trauma of having just been in a deadly force encounter. So that's my long and drawn out way of saying to you, if you carry a gun every day and you think you've got a good amount of firearms training, gun handling training, tactical training, and medical training, then another priority to put on your list would be at least an endeavor to learn the basics of the legal atmosphere surrounding your jurisdiction's self-defense standards. So, that being said, my phone, which is hopefully still recording right now, is also collecting a lot of the water that you probably hear draining in the background. So, last I heard, water and electronics don't particularly get along, so I better cut this short. And I think I hear Mass Ayub calling everyone back in the classroom. So on that note, I'll head back in. Wait, I see some of my fellow students out here. Oh, hold on. Here's Mass Ayub. Hey, Mass. I am recording for a podcast. Will you say hello?
Hello.
Mass, what's your favorite color?
At the moment, black. You've been an angel for us.
How's the class going so far?
It's going good. Good. A lot of sharp people.
And right now we're doing a mock trial, right?
We are. I call it marsupial court.
How are your students doing so far?
They're doing well. We've got a newly minted attorney who's doing the cross-examinations for the state. And he's cross-examining a police trainer who's in the role of defendant. And as I told the kid during the last break, enjoy yourself because this is probably the toughest cop you'll ever cross-examine for the rest of your career.
Absolutely. So absolutely.
We're preparing you.
Why do you think this kind of training is important for folks who carry a gun every day?
To have an idea of what they're going to face afterwards. The way opposing counsel will often twist the facts and try to manipulate them. There's a famous or infamous, depending how you want to characterize him, attorney out of Detroit named Jeffrey Fieger. He was Kevorkian's lawyer. And in a long series of interviews with one of the Detroit newspapers, during which he said repeatedly that he was the greatest lawyer who ever lived, he made a telling statement. He let the mask slip, and he said, "The jury is the tapestry upon which I paint my alternate reality."
Wow.
And alternate reality is something a whole lot of them traffic in. It's just he was the only one arrogant enough to come out and say it to a newspaper.
Well, there you have it, folks. That's why you should take classes like this. Mass, I know we're going to get started in a moment.
Thank you for all your help and your splendid guest lecture, Tiffany.
Oh, I appreciate that. Yeah, so I left that part out. I was invited to do a guest lecture at Mass Ayub's class. How awesome is that? With that being said, since he gave me a nice compliment, I probably shouldn't be late getting back to class, so I will skedaddle. And on that note, everybody stay safe and keep it centered and even.
You can follow Tiffany at frontsightpress.com.
Cerakote is a polymer ceramic composite coating that can be applied to metals, plastics, polymers, and wood. It's also what will take your plain Jane firearm from basic to full custom. Whether you want a handgun coated in just a single color, your hunting rifle camouflaged for your specific environment, or your competition pistol sprayed in purple, white, and black Carolina Cryptic, you want Carolina ceramic coating to do the job. Bud and his team of skilled technicians will carefully disassemble and clean your firearm, professionally apply the Cerakote in your choice of colors and patterns, and return your firearm to you in perfect working order. And they also do auto engine parts. When I wanted my competition handgun Cerakoted, I trusted Carolina Ceramic Coating, and you should too. Check out their work on Instagram. Search at CerakoteNC, that's at CERAKOTENC, or go to CarolinaCeramicCoating.com. And now it's time for Blue Collar Prepping with that bratty kid sister of the gun blogosphere, Erin Paulette.
Come on, every pony! It's time for Blue Collar Prepping with Erin Paulette!
Hello, preppers. If you are listening to this podcast on Sunday night, you have exactly 14 days until Christmas. Hopefully you have all prepared for the season by buying your presents early. Or, at the very least, you know what you plan to get and you have the shipping times worked so that all of your gifts arrive on schedule. As for myself, well, not to brag, but I completed all of my Christmas shopping before it was even December, and now I'm working on my famous, or perhaps infamous, My Little Pony Christmas cards. But for those of you who haven't finished your shopping, or for those of you who are just now going, oh crap, I really need to get started, Santa's elf Aaron is here to give you some ideas for inexpensive but useful stocking stuffers for friends and family. Give them to people who aren't yet into prepping as a combination gift and kick in the butt, or get a bunch of things and make a smorgasbord box of handy preps. Everyone needs a good flashlight. I recommend the 300 lumen mini Cree LED flashlight by Ultrafire. It uses a single AA battery, is super efficient, has a zoomable focus, and at only 4 inches long, it fits comfortably in pockets and purses. It's only $6, and like most of the items I'm going to recommend, has Amazon's 2-day Prime shipping. Everyone also needs a good fixed blade knife. I've talked about Mora knives before, and they're still the best kept secret in the knife world. They're amazingly ergonomic, don't need sharpening out of the box, and come in a variety of colors, including military green, tactical black, and magenta. They range in price from $10 to $22, depending on which color you get. Worried about loved ones getting lost or succumbing to the elements? No worries, fam, I got you covered. There's a company called SOL for Survive Outdoors Longer, and they make a panoply of survival tools for use when you're the other kind of SOL. A 2-person survival blanket costs $6 and will keep them warm and dry, while a $9 signal mirror and a $6 package of rescue whistles will ensure they are seen and heard. If you're looking for something to put you over the limit for free shipping, get an eyeglass repair kit for $4 that comes with a magnifying glass, 12 screws for eyeglass hinges and nose pieces, and a teeny tiny screwdriver for those tiny little screws. These kits are essential if, like me, you need glasses to function, but they're still nice to have if your sunglasses break. Other good things to put inside stockings are things which you can pick up at just about any grocery store, like batteries, AA or AAA, disposable lighters, and rolls of duct tape. Did you know that duct tape is made of cotton and can be used as a fire starter? This last item isn't really a stocking stuffer, and it's quite odd, but I'm including it here because there is a humorous Christmas story attached to it. 3 years ago, my mother had cataract surgery, and that made it harder for her to focus her eyes enough to do the knitting and stitching that she enjoys. In desperation, I ordered her a multi-power head magnifier. You know, those magnifying lenses on headbands that jewelers and watchmakers use? Because it was only $9 and I could get it to her in 2 days. I figured that even if she hated it, I could still find a use for it. To my extreme amazement and delight, my mother loved it and uses it daily. It's given her years of faithful use and has brought peace and joy to the house because she is no longer frustrated about being unable to see her hobbies. So if you have a family member who has poor vision and whose hobbies include precision work like making models or painting miniatures or tying fishing lures, get one of these. I guarantee you that you won't regret it.
There was so much anti-gun nuttery on the Professor Puppet video Weird did last week that he had to come back for more.
In This Week in Anti-Gun Nuttery.
Wow, guys. When friend of the show Roadkill sent me this Professor Puppet video, I was only expecting to get one segment from it. Turns out the anti-gun nuttery was so strong that I needed 2 shows to cover it all. Again, Professor Puppet isn't a serious YouTube channel, so I really don't care what he thinks about guns or the Second Amendment. But the arguments he makes aren't unique. So by me fisking this video, I'll likely give you some great talking points when you encounter an anti-gun argument in your life. The format is Top 5 Reasons to Own an Assault Rifle.
You just want to help keep the peace as part of a well-regulated militia, right? You know, well-regulated, like it says in the Second Amendment?
You've probably heard this one before. Anti-gun people tend to have so much big government on the brain, they just assume that regulated, as it appears in the Bill of Rights, means heavily controlled by government law. Except there wasn't much regulation as far as gun laws in America. You could own everything from a pistol or a carbine and carry it with you everywhere you went. To a fully outfitted warship if you had the money to procure one. Really, all the laws from this time were mandating that people own and carry guns. An interesting fact, in the light of all the talk of guns in churches after the killing in Sutherland Springs, Texas. In places like Massachusetts and South Carolina, it was illegal to come to church unarmed. See, the Native Americans figured out that during Sunday services, everybody in town would be packed into one place. And I guess, like today, colonists had as much reluctance to bring guns into church as they do now. So having that many defenseless people in one spot was a prime target for attack. But like Sean is fond of saying, well-regulated means subject to lots of laws, in exactly the same way infantry means a military unit comprised solely of babies. This is the first definition of the word in the Merriam-Webster's dictionary: to bring under control of law or constituted authority. The actual meaning of well-regulated with respect to the Second Amendment is to bring order, method, or uniformity to. As in, you can't have a citizen militia that is competent in their arms if they aren't permitted to own and use arms in their own time in between musters.
Oh, you're not a fan of the government? Well, in that case, you might want an assault rifle for reason number two: to overthrow the U.S. government. Okay, if you really want to overthrow the government, you're really going to need a lot of these, because they have, like, an army, a navy, an air force, some marines, drones even. You are really not going to win that fight.
I hear this all the time from anti-gunners. I have to wonder if part of this argument is the fantasy that the U.S. military will descend and purge all those other people with glorious violence. There's a couple of problems with that. Gun owners, as much as the anti-gun nuts would love to think so, aren't orcs. Further, if we're talking true tyrannical treatment of the people, not only will the military and the police need to be attacking their own neighbors, there might be splits within the ranks of people siding with the freedom fighters. It's all a moot debate, because like the person who carries concealed, when a person or population has taken defense to mind, both against criminal elements or an overreaching government, that person or persons becomes an undesirable target for attack. A mugger is not going to target the person who's walking with their head up, scanning for threats and avoiding dark alleyways. And the government is not going to try to stuff armed people into boxcars or send them to internment camps. Given that reality, it makes me wonder why some people are in such an all-fired-up hurry to ban guns by any means necessary.
But if you're a true believer, raging against the tyranny of what you feel is a corrupt system, you're a freedom fighter. Well, you know, most terrorists think of themselves as freedom fighters too.
What we have here is a false equivalency. Just because terrorists call themselves freedom fighters doesn't make all freedom fighters terrorists. Any place there is a tyrannical government, there are people fighting against it. Heck, the United States must be a terrorist state because we're using troops to help people fight against ISIS. It's not a true statement, but it is a statement to get people who might consider gun control to think about gun owners not as people of a differing opinion, but a threat that needs to be eliminated. We can't be humans in the eyes of the anti-gun nuts. We need to be monsters for their arguments to work.
I know Thomas Jefferson said there should be a new American Revolution every 20 years, but I think he was talking more in the metaphorical sense of the revolution of elections.
Actually, he did. He lived through the American Revolution. It wasn't a metaphor to him. The Founding Fathers threw off an overbearing government physically. They were not monarchists. So King George was just a man to those who wrote the Constitution. So they were not so arrogant as to think that they might not overstep their powers as well. And for that, they knew they should be killed for it. Is it any wonder, with people thinking like that, that they were very careful not to press the issue? All that being said, that is how we're settling our differences. Note that the anti-gunners are the ones going against democracy, calling the system broken because they aren't getting their way. So long as there are free elections and a functioning society, there isn't a need to break out the guns. But when that system does break down, like Ferguson, Missouri, or the storms in Texas and Florida, or when bullets started flying in Sutherland Springs, that is when the guns need to come out. And boy, they work really well.
That's why the Constitution has its own built-in mechanism for changing itself and its amendments when the times change.
This is a talking point we don't often hear from the politicians and the corporate anti-gun lobby. But we do hear frequently from the fans of gun control. And I think we all agree on this point. Anti-gunners, are you unhappy with people owning AR-15s, magazines, and carrying handguns around the country? Fine, just repeal the Second Amendment and you'll have an easy time living your dream. See, the Second Amendment means what it says. And generally, the American people like it. Hence why anti-gun laws don't have much luck outside the bluest of blue states.
Which leads us to the number one reason to buy an assault rifle, which is to murder a lot of people really fast.
This is near ubiquitous whenever anyone is speaking in favor of so-called assault weapons bans. But it's the most demonstrably false argument one could make. If this is the number one reason to buy a modern sporting rifle, again, he uses assault rifle here incorrectly, then all we need to do is think of some of the companies that make just the AR-15 pattern rifle and think about how many units they make every year, and these units are all selling. If the number one reason to own the most popular rifle pattern in America is mass murder, why are we all still alive? Further, why do we issue them to the police? That leads to his next point.
And if you think you need one, because the bad guys out there who have them, the crazies, the fanatics, the criminals, well, they only have them because they are so readily available and easy to get.
This is crap logic. This idea has been fielded by the supporters of the original assault weapons ban. During the ban, there was a huge shift in law enforcement weapons, from revolvers and pump-action shotguns to double-stack pistols and semi-auto rifles. If these guns are so deadly and dangerous that they need to be banned, why do we give them to peace officers for everyday duties? The antis generally reply, because the criminals have bigger and better guns, so the cops need bigger and better guns. This sits right there with proportional force arguments and stupidity. If somebody comes at me with a knife, do I draw my knife? No, I draw my gun. And if I have a choice, I grab a rifle, because deadly force is deadly force, and I would like the best tool for the job. These are the best tools for the job for lawful self-defense, and this is why these guns are so popular. Also, it doesn't hurt that they can also double well as a recreational, hunting, and sporting arms.
And just because it's also possible to kill someone with other things, like knives and cars, regulating assault weapons would be like banning them? Well, for starters, knives and cars have many other non-murder uses.
Self-defense is not murder. Defending your life with deadly force is legal and good behavior. And not only is that the thought here, but it's the line of thinking everywhere in the world. Murder is illegal everywhere, and self-defense is legal everywhere. The big difference is the United States doesn't deeply handicap its citizens when it comes to the tools they can use for self-defense.
Is the slope really that slippery, where denying an assault weapon to a religious zealot with violent tendencies leads to the government taking away your grandfather's Remington that hangs over your fireplace?
Well, who defines the religious zealot? And once you nuts get the AR-15, what's going to stop you from coming after the hunting rifles? None of these anti-gun proposals result in safety or security. They all do indeed just lead down the path to mass confiscation. Hence why all the anti-gun nuts rely exclusively on bad faith arguments.
In addition to appearing here, Weird is a regular host on The Squirrel Report and blogs at weirdworld.com. That's W-E-E-R-D world.com.
Plug of the week. Contact your senators. Do you actually want concealed carry reciprocity? You should. It's going to destroy the anti-gun movement forever. And you'll get to carry your guns in other states, which is pretty cool. What's going to happen is, after weeks, months, years of tourists carrying guns in places like New York City and random places in New Jersey on the way to New York City, because nobody goes to New Jersey on purpose, when there isn't blood in the streets, then all the people that the anti-gunners have been frightening in these states are going to go, shrug, and that's going to be the end of them. So I want you to contact your senators. Go to gunblogvarietycast.com/episode173, and there's a link in the show notes. It'll take you to a page that says, write your federal lawmakers. Use that. Tell your senators that you want them to pass H.R. 38, Concealed Carry Reciprocity, and you want them to pass it right now.
It is so easy. All you have to do is enter your name and address and hit enter. I mean, you don't have to write a letter. This practically does everything for you. It will take like less than 30 seconds. Please do this.
To give you an idea of how bad it is on the other side right now, this is an email that I literally got in the middle of recording the podcast. This is from Giffords Pack Courage to Fight Gun Violence. So we have to win. We have to stop them right here, right now. Nothing less than the safety of every community in this country is on the line. Well, definitely we need to pass it now. If these guys are frightened that evil things will happen if they allow people like us to carry guns in their neighborhoods, well, let's give it to them. And then, when nothing bad happens, it's the end of all their power.
You know, there are times when I wonder if Giffords or some of these other people are actually the anti-gun version of NAGR.
Oh, they absolutely are. They absolutely are.
Do even anti-gun people think that Giffords, for example, is completely full of it?
They got to raise money to protect their phony baloney jobs. That's all this is. Let's give them their worst case scenario. Let's not only pass this, let's see what we can do about getting the SHARE Act passed as well.
Amen.
Well, that's our show for the week. Remember that Gunblog Varietycast Radio is a member of the Self Defense Radio Network.
Find the show notes at gunblogvarietycast.com/episode173.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Gunblog Variety Cast. Music courtesy of Rob Allen at blog.roballen.com. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Google Play Music. This podcast is made possible by the Firearms Policy Coalition and by contributions from listeners like you. This is a URS production.